Translation and Purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. A person who is lusty cannot satisfy his mind even if he has enough of everything in this world, including rice, barley, and other food grains, gold, animals, and women. Nothing can satisfy him. Please repeat. A person who is lusty cannot satisfy his mind, even if he has enough of everything in this world, including rice, barley and other food grains, gold, animals and women. Nothing can satisfy him. So the purport. Improvement of one's economic condition is the aim and objective of a materialist. But there is no end to this material advancement. For if one cannot control his lusty desires, he will never be pleased, even if he gets all the material wealth of the world. In this age, we see much material improvement, but still people are struggling to get more and more material opulence. Manas shastanindriyani prakriti stani karshati. Although every living entity is a part of the Supreme Being, because of lusty desires, one continuously struggles for so-called betterment of one's economic condition. To have a satisfied mind, one must give up his heart disease of lusty desires. This can be done only when one is Krishna conscious. Bhaktim parang bhagavati patilabhya kamang haridrogam ashvapahinocha chirena dhiraha. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.33.39. If one becomes Krishna conscious, then he can give up his heart disease. Otherwise, this disease of lusty desires will continue and one cannot have peace in his mind. Yat prithivyam brihiyavan hiranyam pashavastriyaha naduhyante manah pritin pumshah kama hatasyate. A person who is lusty cannot satisfy his mind even if he has enough of everything in this world, including rice, barley and other food grains, gold, animals and women. Nothing can satisfy him. Om Agyana Timarandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Vanchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Pya Epacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So I request the blessings of the devotees so that I may say something appropriate. I got a phone call yesterday afternoon and I was at work, asked to give the class. So I didn't have so much time to prepare because I came home late. So please excuse deficiencies on this part, on my part. Quite a common topic has been discussed in this purport about lust. It's actually, lust has its strict, narrow meaning some sexual desire, and it has its broader meaning. And in this particular verse, it's clear that the broader meaning is being discussed. It's the lust for gold, rice, barley, animals, so forth. So it's generally very much connected with the other term, greed. You know, we have so much, so many material desires that we spend our life trying to satisfy. So it's common knowledge that if you have wealth, you're not satisfied. There are so many examples in this world of wealthy people who were miserable. In fact, there are many examples. And it's interesting, there's been studies have been done, questions have been asked, how much wealth will make you happy? It's interesting that there's been many studies done. One in particular that I'm aware of, the results were quite interesting. Generally, the answer people gave was approximately double the amount of wealth they currently had. So say someone's maybe living in a very humble position, maybe has living in one small room. What would make you happy? How much wealth would make you happy? Their answer would be, if I could afford to rent two rooms, I'd be very happy. And then someone who has two houses, they're like, or one house, well, if I had two houses, I'd be happy. Then you have the millionaire. He's thinking, if I had 2 million, I'd be happy. So it's like this. The billionaire thinks the same way. Recently, my father was visiting me. He told me about a friend of his. He went to university. Now, this friend, extremely motivated, to the point where my father couldn't work with him. They had some research project at the university and they were sharing technical equipment. And this man, he was so motivated to do well that he kept eating into my father's time, so he couldn't have the opportunity to use the equipment. So this man, so motivated, after he graduated, he started a business and he became a multi-billionaire. So many years later, he donates some money to the University of Edinburgh. So as a gesture of reciprocation, the university organised a little meal, a little gathering to honour this person. So the man, he looked at the guest list and he noticed that his friends from university weren't there. This was now 20 or so years later. So he arranged for the university to invite my father because he was a close friend. So my father went there. So my father's observation was, this man, he was very, very unhappy. He was a billionaire, extremely unhappy. My father met his family. He was talking with his family. His family didn't even like this man. The man was impossible to live with because he was so motivated, so highly strung, and everything had to be done his way that his family just couldn't get on with him. So this is an example of someone who's so wealthy and yet he has no happiness. And this is what's mentioned in the verse. Nadukhyante mana pratim. Does not give you happiness. So let's analyze. Why not? The answer is he has so many unfulfilled desires. See, it doesn't matter how much you have. It's whether you have what you want. If you desire very little and you have very little, then you're happy. If you have a lot but you desire more, then you're unhappy. It's that deficit, that's what makes you unhappy. And this is what this survey was kind of pointing out. The point is, as soon as you get what you want, something changes inside you and you want more. You just recalibrate and then you desire more. So what is that? What is causing this? We have to look at the psychology behind this. It's actually described in the Bhagavad Gita. Asha pasha shatayar badha. Kama krodha parayana. The demoniac mentality, absorbed in kama, lust, krodha, anger, and bound by asha, pasha, shata, which compound word, asha means desire, pasha means rope, shata means hundreds. So this is a demoniac mentality. Due to desire, we are bound by hundreds of ropes of desire. Therefore, this man, because he's in the mode of passion and he's very progressive, wants to advance materially, therefore he has to suffer. His life is a life of suffering and he cannot satisfy his desires. Now, this is the demoniac mentality. Kama, krodha, parayana. Nice little word here. This is the demons. They're devoted to lust and anger. But what about someone in the mode of goodness? It's sukha, sangena, badnati, jnana, sangena, Chanaga. He is bound as well, but he is bound by happiness and knowledge. So Prabhupada gives the example. He said, you may be in prison, you may have chains on. So does it matter if your chains are made of gold or silver or iron? Of course not. A chain is a chain. So the mode of goodness is like the golden chain. It's actually very dangerous because sukha sangena. Badnati, you're bound by happiness. To be happy and to have knowledge and to show off your knowledge. This is a type of goodness, it's a type of happiness. And it stops us from actually progressing out of this material world. So although knowledge is a type of wealth, it's not the type of wealth that we ultimately hanker for, especially if it's material knowledge. Spiritual knowledge is different. That's another type of wealth. What is the greatest wealth? So Lord Chaitanya, when he was speaking to Ramananda Roy, he asked, what is the greatest wealth? Who knows what the answer was? Association of devotees. That was the answer to one other question. I can't remember which one. But the greatest misery was to not have the association of devotees. When asked what is the greatest wealth, he said, Ramananda Roy said, Radha Krishna Premi Jara Se Badadhani. One who has Radha Krishna Prem, he is the most wealthy. Ultimately, that is our wealth. And ironically, that is a type of wealth that is never satiated either, right? If you study the symptoms of prema, they're described extensively in Chaitanya Charitamrita. One of them is one is never satiated. The love grows and grows, therefore one feels never satisfied. In fact, one can even have the association of Krishna and still feel unsatisfied. One can be feeling separation and association, union at the same time, such as the contradictory nature of prema. So ultimately, our ultimate wealth is prema. The verse that's quoted, the nice verse that's quoted in the purport, it's a famous verse. The whole verse is not quoted, but the whole verse is Vikriditam Brajavadubir Idangcha Vishno Shradanvato Nushunayad Atavarna Yedyaha Bhaktim Param Bhagavati Patilabhyakamam Hridrogam Ashvapahinat Chachirena Dhiraha. This verse, it's the last verse of the chapter of the 10th canto on the rasa dance. The meaning is, if one hears and describes with faith the pastimes of Krishna with the gopis and the other pastimes of Krishna, then one will attain pure devotion and the material disease of lust within the heart will be destroyed. Now, this is a very interesting verse. Around 5 years ago, I purchased a book from the bookshop here. It was called Shararta Darshini. You may have heard of it. It's the 10th canto commentary written by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. So I've read probably 60% of it. I have this habit when I read a book. I generally don't have the appetite to read a book from cover to cover. So what I tend to do is I read it and then I decide, okay, I would like to read something else. Then I put it away. Then I read another thing for a while. Then I read something else for a while. Then after a while, I go back to something else I used to read. It's the way I do things. So I have a bookcase full of unfinished books. I mean, it's about 7 or 8 unfinished. I can never really reduce it that much because I keep starting new books before I finish old ones. Anyway, I don't mind. It's not a problem for me. As long as I'm reading something, you know, it's all good. So this, it's 5 years ago I read it, so I practically don't remember anything I read. But there's one thing I particularly remember, the purport to this verse. It was very, very interesting, very revealing. I'll describe what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says. If we look at the line, I can read you it. Unfortunately, it's not on the board, but I'll tell you, let's break down what's written here. Bhaktim Param Bhagavati Pratilabhya. That these four words, they form a little phrase that can be translated into English. The meaning is, well, first of all, bhakti, we know what bhakti means, it means devotion. Param means the highest. So what is the highest devotion? It's a simple word for it, I've already mentioned it. What is the highest? When your bhakti reaches its highest point, what is it called? Prema, right? So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he explains that Bhaktim Param means prema. Bhagavati means to the Lord. He's known as Bhagavan, therefore Bhagavati means to the Lord. And Pratilabhya means obtaining. So the verse is actually saying that when you obtain prema, Now, immediately, alarm bell should ring. Kamam hridrogam ashvapahinoti. Your heart disease will be destroyed. This is what it's mentioned. When you attain prema, your heart disease is destroyed. Now, this is a bit strange, isn't it? Because one may ask, well, how do you attain prema in the first place? If you have heart disease, if you have lust, how do you attain prema? But here it's saying, when you attain prema, your lust is destroyed. This is not a mistake. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains why. He says, prema is independent and prema is strong. Therefore, you cannot say prema cannot manifest in an impure heart. If you said that, then you would be restricting the movement of prema. One may also ask, how is it possible? How can anything, the lust in our heart is so such a severe disease, how can anything destroy it? How can we destroy it by our own efforts? We can't. Ultimately, we rely on the Ladini Shakti, on Radharani, prema, call it what you like, entering our heart. That the potency there will destroy that heart disease known as lust. So this always struck me, remember this point. It's very interesting. Because generally we think, I've got to become pure. Yes, we have to become pure. But ultimately we don't become pure unless we're made pure. And that is by the spiritual energy entering our heart. And if you study the progress from Shraddha to Prema, there's some famous verses. You know, what is the verse from the Bhakti Rasamrita that describes Bhav? It's Shuddha Sattva Visheshatma. Prema suryangsha samyabak ruchi bishchita masrinya krida sau bhava uchati. Bhav means when suddha sattva, or pure goodness, which is like the son of prema, enters the heart. Actually, it's not even, and the point of bhava, it's not even the whole son, it's ruchi bi means like just a ray of prema. Enters the heart, it softens the heart. That's known as bhav. And when that mood completely ripens, then it's called prema. Prema is like the sun, and bhav is like the ray of the sun. So when that enters the heart, then one is purified. So this is how we actually become pure. More on this verse, famous verse. The first part. I mean, as another point here that kind of arises when I read this verse. This verse is saying that if you read about the pastime of Krishna with the gopis, then you become pure. Now, there's another point about this verse. The word cha, which means and, it's a very small word. It has a very significant meaning in this verse. The first line is Vikriditam Brajavadubir Idang Cha Vishnu. The word cha in this verse means it's not just talking about Krishna's pastimes with the gopis. The cha means all of Krishna's pastimes. So when he's killing the demons as well, if you read those pastimes, your heart will become pure. Your lusty desires will be destroyed. So it's a misconception to think, and sometimes it's recommended that if you're suffering from lusty desires, you should read about Krishna and the gopis. That's true. But it's also true that if you read about Krishna killing the demons, your lusty desires will also be destroyed. That point has to be made. Anyway, so that's another point about the verse. It's wonderful how it's got so full of meaning. Another point, one may ask, and Prabhupada says this a lot, don't jump to the 10th canto. We have 9 other cantos. We should read all these 9 cantos before we proceed to the 10th canto. Therefore, we should be careful understanding what this verse means, to say that by reading about Krishna's dancing with the gopis, our lust is destroyed. There are qualifications required. So Prabhupada, he wrote the Krishna book. The Krishna book is a wonderful composition because it allows us to access these pastimes without having read the 9 cantos. Prabhupada didn't say, first of all, read the 9 cantos, then read the Krishna book. But he did say, first of all, read 9 cantos before reading the 10th canto. So there's a difference here. Now, Prabhupada, he's done something very wonderful. And if we study the Krishna book, we see that the philosophy of how Krishna is God is very nicely blended in, more so than in the 10th canto. In the 10th canto, there's also several very prominent verses which describe how Krishna is God. They're interspersed. You know, Mother Yashoda's, he opens Krishna's mouth. Then she gets the realization that Krishna's God. Well, there's verses about how fortunate the residents of Vrindavan are. How does it go again? I'm trying to remember the verse. Nanda Gopa Brajaukasam Yanmitram Paramamandam Puna Brahma Sanatanam. How the residents of Vrindavan are so fortunate because Purna Brahma means Krishna. Krishna has become their friend. So there are so many verses like this that describe how Krishna is God. But even more so when you read the 10th canto. Therefore, there's no question of mistaking Krishna's pastimes with the gopis to be ordinary if you read attentively. Anyway, going back to the point. So I was wondering, well, how is this verse true? It says if you read the pastime of Krishna with the gopis, then your lust is destroyed. Because Srila Prabhupada says if you read these pastime, then you are doomed spiritually if you're not qualified. But it's actually in the verse too. In several places, the last word, dhiraha, is very significant. This thing about reading the 10th canto, if you're dhira, then your lust will be destroyed. If you're not dhira, dhira means sober. If you have the right qualification, you will get the right result from reading the 10th canto. If you have the wrong qualification, if you're not qualified, you're doomed. This is the point. Therefore, adhikar, or qualification, is so important when it comes to reading literature. Therefore, we have this very strong emphasis from our acharyas against sahajism. It's very strong. There is so much literature that we should not touch. They're not for general reading. And unfortunately, some of those books are now commonly read amongst devotees. And we should be very careful whether we are qualified or not. I'll give you one example. The godbrother of Srila Prabhupada, he did not read, what's it called again? I forgot the name of the book now. Ujjvala Nilamani. Now, it's very common for people to read this. It is like the sequel to Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu describes all the five rasas, including the Madhurya ras. But of the five rasas, the Madhurya ras is most prominent, is most expanded. Therefore, Rupa Goswami wrote another book called Ujjvala Nilamani to further elaborate upon the Madhurya ras. Srila Prabhupada said this book is not for general reading. You've got to be very qualified to read this book. So interesting enough, Bhakti Rakshasira Swami, the godbrother of Prabhupada, he's quite a distinguished disciple of Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati, he never read it. So then one must ask, well, if he didn't read it, who am I to read it? Personally, I think that's a good angle to take. We should be very cautious about reading such literature. But then we see scholars, I know there's one devotee scholar. I'm not going to say this is wrong, because the purpose for this was to not to claim to enter into the pastime. The purpose was just to study the book from an academic perspective. But I was listening to a seminar from one devotee scholar who was researching this book, and he was traveling throughout India, and he met an obstacle that so many of the people he met, they would say to him, I haven't read this book because I don't have the qualification. And they were discouraging this scholar from studying the book. Sri Sri Radha Gokulananda Ki Jai, Sri Sri Sita Ram Lakshman Hanuman Ki Jai, Sri Sri Gornitai Ki Jai. Yeah, this scholar, he didn't have the attitude, I will not read this book. But many of the devotees he met, they were from different mats and so forth. He was interviewing him, trying to get a deeper understanding of this book, and he met with resistance, and rightly so. Many devotees were saying, I am waiting to become qualified before I read this book. So I think this is it's a very good, a very safe attitude to have. And I will... got a few minutes left. I'll relate this verse. There were some other things I was thinking about. As I say, I got a phone call during the afternoon, but before that, I was having a dialogue on Facebook with some devotees. Now, I don't watch the news, I don't read the news so much, but I heard that in America, same-sex marriage has been legalized. Am I right? It's been the news. So a lot of devotees are now discussing it, because what's the Gaudiya Vaishnav perspective on it? Now, we have to be careful how we approach this subject. On the one hand, we have to be careful that we don't dilute the standards. And on the other hand, we have to be careful that we don't alienate people. Some people have a certain sexual orientation, and they feel very discouraged when they are, almost demonized for this. So we have to be careful. There's a balancing act going on. Anyway, I was discussing this on Facebook, and it's one of those topics that gets very hot. A lot of devotees like to discuss it, and it's easy for there to be disagreements. And then some people are actually smiling in the audience. This discussion has probably been going on amongst other devotees as well. Anyway, just to get to the point, at one point I just pointed out something which it's not so well understood, but it's my conviction based on Shastra, and that is sexual orientation, like any other type of lust, is actually on the mental platform. Now, some devotees, they maybe don't like this. They think, no, it's deeper than that. It goes to my very being. No, actually, mental platform is a very deep platform. And if you look at this point in the seventh canto, there's a verse from Prahlad Maharaj. Yan mai tunadi grihamedi sukamituchum kanduya nena karayoi badukadukum tripyanti neha kripana bahuduka bhaja kanduti van manasijam vishahe tadhiraha. The word dhiraha appearing again. The meaning is that the happiness that one gets from sexual activity and from griham medi life in general is tucha. It means it's very insignificant, and it's just like scratching an itch. If you have an itch on your hand, you scratch it. That it's just relieving an itch, satisfying this type of happiness. And not only that, it's described as manasi jam. It's a very significant word, manasi jam, which means it's born of the mind. And therefore, vishaheta dhira. Those who are sober, they just tolerate. Now, this verse is directly describing sexuality, both in its extended and its narrow form. And it's described as manasi ja, born of the mind. And it cannot be anything else. E bhalo e manda e sababram. To say what is good and bad in this world, it is all illusion. Dvaiti badra badra jnani sabamano dharma. It is mano dharma. So when we interact with this world, we place value. We accept this, we reject this. So it's the same with sexuality. We are conditioned. I accept. This is attraction. I accept. This is repulsion. I reject. This is all manodharma. Therefore, but to call it manodharma is not to trivialize it. We recognize that even though it's simply the mind, the mental platform, still the conditioning is very strong. So the problem is, let's get to the problem here. We have very categorical statements from Srila Prabhupada that condemns homosexuality. Let's not get round this point. It's in the Bhagavatam itself. Now, there's been attempts to try and reduce the force of those statements by analysing what the previous acharyas say on these sections of the Bhagavatam. And to be fair, there is some validity in that, in the sense that sometimes, in one particular purport, Prabhupada is describing it in relation to homosexuality, but when you study the previous acharyas, it's not there. Okay, we can take some... There's some validity in that point. But at the same time, we cannot reduce or relativize the purport. So we have a dilemma here. But anyway, let's get to the point. Within the Grihastha ashram, why is there even a Grihastha ashram? Why don't we all just tolerate? There's plenty of non-devotees procreating. We don't need to procreate to keep the population of the earth going. We can all just become renounced. But the answer is because we can't do it. And some of we're wired. Some of these desires are so strong that they disturb us. We can't practice our devotional life. You know, some people, you know, they want to get married and they don't get married. And for some people, it can actually just spoil their whole psychology, isn't it? It's just, it's too much for some people. They don't get what they need. And then they become a little bit, they become permanently irritable. It's like a type of, it's almost like trauma. You know, I was discussing with one devotee about trauma. Actually with Giridhari. I was at Glastonbury. And then this they like to make a show at Glastonbury. So there's a low-flying plane. Shoo, very loud. And Giri, he said, you know, I'm traumatized. When Giri was in Africa many, many decades ago, probably a couple of 20 years ago, he was attacked. Someone with a hammer attacked him. And he was just left to die on the street. Fortunately, Tribhuvanath came and saw him. And he was taken to hospital. And he was, you know, his jaw was fractured or his skull was fractured. He told me he was traumatized by it. Actually, we all get traumatized by different things. So I said to him, you know, I'm traumatized as well, but it's my own fault. You know, I mean, several years ago I was working, I overworked, and then I became nervous. And I've actually not recovered even after 2 years. It's my own fault. I should have been more careful. Anyway, we all get kind of trauma. Glastonbury, it's nectar, but it's also trauma as well. I was high. We were chanting so much, I just got high on it. I was working out. I did about, you know, a month's worth of chanting in by my standards, within 3 days. I was just chanting all the time. And it was great. And I came back from Glastonbury. I was just on a high. And then I came down. And then I realized how I was just shattered, you know, psychologically shattered, physically shattered. And for a few days, I didn't go to the temple, and then I had to work, and then I'm just kind of gradually recovering now. Anyway, the point is that you know, another example, Shiva Maharaj was talking about in the Battle of Kurukshetra. You don't learn about post-traumatic stress, right? The warriors, they don't have post-traumatic stress. So what are this trauma? Where does it come from? It's actually still on the mental platform. If one can control the mind, then there is no trauma. So even like someone, you know, in the First World War, they didn't understand post-traumatic stress. So they just put it down to cowardice. And then people were court-martialed and shot. It's terrible, imagine that. You go to fight for your country, and then you become traumatized. So you're like a shivering jelly. And then you're told, you know, pull yourself together, you know. Oh, you're a coward, and then you'd be court-martialed and shot. That's how the people responded. But in the Mahabharata, there's no discussion of post-traumatic stress. But ultimately, it's all coming from the mind. Now, there's one statement that Lord Shiva makes. Narayana para sarve na kutaschana bibhiti svargapavarga narakesh apituya tadarshana. When one is devoted to Lord Narayan, then all situations are equal. It's called Samadarshana or Apituyartadarshana. Tuya Artadarshana means one sees everything as equal. So even such a person, they can go to hell and they'll be perfectly peaceful. Someone's Narayana Para, if they're attached to Krishna, if they're Krishna conscious, then even in the midst of the greatest trauma externally, like during a war or something, they're very peaceful. In this connection, I always think of Tribhuvanath, his amazing surrender. He was distributing books in the Middle East during a war, or he's off going to Africa where it's just hellish. There's a mosquito, getting bitten by mosquitoes. There's danger every step. You could be shot. There's so many. But he was always so blissful in spite of all that. And even when he had malaria and he fell over, when he had malaria, he collapsed and he fractured his skull. And still he was getting up from Angularity, doing all these things. I mean, he's just a phenomenal example. So what consciousness did this person have? I mean, how can we understand it? But it reminds me of this, that if you're off the mental platform, then happiness and distress, they don't matter at all. So going back to the Facebook conversation, discussion about should this devotee, I didn't discuss what he didn't describe his personal situation, but judging by his comments, I think he's a homosexual himself. His desire is, let me have a platonic relationship with another man within Krishna consciousness. And he was wanting that to be recognized. And his argument was, well, in ISKCON, generally within heterosexual relationships, a platonic relationship is glorified as being a high standard, therefore why not the same for homosexuals? That was his argument. And I didn't actually answer either way. I just pointed out that it, in some senses it was common sense. And I said the only thing I, free personally, the only thing I was not sure about was I'd never seen anything in Scripture or any of the previous acharyas kind of sanctioning such a thing. Therefore, I sat on the fence, basically. I didn't want to disturb him. At the same time, I didn't want to say, yes, this is good. I can't honestly say. But anyway, we have to be careful because for that devotee, and he made the point, he says, I don't want to be ostracized. Okay, I accept this point. For some people, this sexual urge is so strong that if they don't get a proper situation, then they can actually flip. And actually, we know this. This is just known. That's why we have, for example, within heterosexuality, that's why we have a grihastha ashram. We know that some people just can't renounce, but renunciation is the best thing. So in this, whichever way you go in this particular discussion, we should remember, you know, we should, how should we say, empathize with someone who is in a situation that they're suffering from and they can't find a legitimate way to redress that. And I'm not going to say any more than that, but that's my take on it. And just to finish, one more point. The context of this verse is King Yayati becoming renounced. He's enjoyed sexual activity. Then he creates a story about a male, a he-goat and a she-goat. And this story is just to try and educate his wife, to explain things. It's interesting that the word, the reason I'm bringing this up because the word vairagya can be understood in an interesting way. It means viraga, without raga, or raga can mean lust, without lust. Raga also means color. Like, I think the word red means raga. Red, raga means red. Someone's nodding their head. Anyway, the point is, when we have mode of passion, and this is all about mode of passion, you know, in the Bhagavad Gita it says kama esha, krodha esha, raja guna samudbhava. The kama and the krodha, they come from rajagun. Rajagun is a nice mode at first because it's progressive, you're gaining things, you're trying hard, it looks good, but it ends in misery because kama and krodha, it leads to lust and anger. So going back to this word raga, raga means colour. So when we have the mode of passion, we see things with a certain vision. It's like we have a certain colour, like we have spectacles have a certain colour. If you have red spectacles on, everything's red. So in the same way, when we have mode of passion, we don't see reality. We actually see a distorted reflection of reality. Prabhupada gives a nice example. He says, take a young woman, for example. The young man sees the young woman as a sexual object. The mother sees the young woman as daughter. The tiger sees the woman as a meal. So which is right? The answer is none of them are right. They've all added a little extra. Their desire has distorted their vision of reality. Now in the mode of goodness, janma mrityu jara vyadi dukkha dosha anudarshanam. Real knowledge means you're in the mode of goodness, you see what is actually out there. And what is actually out there? It's birth, death, old age, disease, suffering. That's actually what this material world is. And when we're in the mode of goodness, that's actually what we see. Anyway, I stop here. It's past. We've got a time for maybe a question.